You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A new version of the online free application for federal student aid, also known as FAFSA, had a soft launch in late December and officially went live in early January after weeks of delays. The form was redesigned to be simpler so that more students would apply for federal aid. But the rollout of the new form came with a host of technical problems. Now the Department of Education announced that students' financial info won't be released to schools until mid-March. It's a two-month delay from when schools typically receive FAFSA info and start putting together financial aid packages for incoming students and those with continuing enrollment. The delay is raising concern that students won't be able to make informed decisions about where to attend school next year and how much it's going to cost. Our next guest has researched FAFSA completion rates in Wisconsin and is an expert on financial aid policy. She's here to help us understand what the latest FAFSA delays could mean for students and families. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or someone in your family filled out that FAFSA form this year? Was it a smooth process? Did you have troubles with the website? Did you have to delay a few weeks along the way? Are you worried about the delay in information maybe affecting what you know about a big decision coming up? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ellie Brooker is Associate Director of Policy Analytics at the Institute for College Access and Success. She has a PhD in Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis from UW-Madison. Ellie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, some people are intimately familiar with the FAFSA. Some people are not. Can you introduce us? What is the FAFSA? Why are people worried about it?
Sure. So the FAFSA is the free application for federal student aid. It is the primary way that students access financial aid of all kinds. Some states have their own additional financial aid forms, but the only way that you're going to get federal student loans, Pell Grants, all federal financial aid, and most state financial aid is by filling out that form every year.
Okay, so we had the old FAFSA form. What led to this decision to change it, to try to simplify it?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the primary goal here was to make the FAFSA simpler. So prior to the FAFSA Simplification Act that was passed in 2021, the FAFSA had about over 100 questions, and the new FAFSA now should have about 36 questions for most filers. I think the other big piece that tried to make things simpler here was improving the connections between the Department of Education and the IRS so that data used to calculate student financial need was sent directly from the IRS to the Department of Ed without requiring students and families to input that information.
Before we get to what's gone wrong over the last couple of months, you see some problems at the outset, as I understand it, when it comes to funding for the rollout of this new version of the FAFSA. What do you think might have come out better from Congress to get ready for this big change?
Sure. So I think it's really important to acknowledge that this is the biggest overhaul of the FAFSA in decades. So some hiccups were probably going to happen no matter what. But that was definitely exacerbated by the fact that Congress required the department to release the new FAFSA for this aid year, but didn't attach any additional resources for them to do that. And not only that, the Federal Student Aid Office, or the FSA, who's responsible for this, was flat funded, which means they're allocated the same budget from previous years. So the FSA is underfunded and facing real capacity challenges trying to get this done. And we would have liked to see them properly fund the FSA so that they could do this well.
So what were some of the earliest signs that things weren't going to go as smoothly as we might have hoped?
Yeah, so the very first issue was the initial delay. So for the last several years, students and families have been able to access the FAFSA starting on October 1st, which means then that colleges, as you said, were receiving information to create financial aid packages much earlier. So right from the start, the department was not able to get the new form up and running on time and announced that that would be live at the beginning of December, and that eventually became the end of December. As soon as then the application was available, there were some issues, though these were, I think we'd understand is fairly routine for the launch of a new form like this, people having difficulties getting logged on, things timing out, folks being unable to submit the form. But I think then we started learning about much larger issues.
And what were some of those issues?
Sure. So one of the biggest ones has to do with the new formula for calculating financial needs. So in addition to simplifying the FAFSA. This new FAFSA also made really important changes to the way we calculate students' financial need. It changed that methodology so that more students would have access to federal Pell Grants, which is the largest portion of federal grant aid. And that formula was intended to be adjusted to inflation, and that was not done. The department didn't make that adjustment. And so not making that adjustment means that it appears as if families have more discretionary income than they do in reality, and many, many students who would appear ineligible for Pell Grants when, in fact, they should be eligible for Pell Grants. Initially, the department wasn't going to fix that mistake, but that decision was reversed, and making that fix is the primary delay for releasing financial information to colleges. The other issue I really want to highlight here is one that's affecting specifically mixed status families, and that's families with a parent or parents who are undocumented and a student who is a citizen. Those families right now are completely unable to fill out the FAFSA because the form is inaccessible without a Social Security number. So even though the student is a citizen and is eligible for federal financial aid, they're currently not able to complete the FAFSA, and so that's another item on the to-do list for the Department of Ed.
Talking to Ellie Brooker with the Institute for College Access and Success, talking about this key financial aid form for college students, new and continuing college students, the FAFSA, a big change in the form, simplifying the form, but difficulties in the rollout. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you filled out a FAFSA over the last couple few months? How did it go? Did you delay doing it because you were hearing about these problems? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Ellie, the latest shoe to drop now, the Department of Education letting colleges know, hey, we're going to get you information about your students and their eligibility for financial aid. It's going to be later than you're used to. How big a delay is that, and what's the impact?
So the delay now is mid-March. Colleges were receiving financial aid information for students from the Department of Ed in January, typically. And so now that's about a two-month delay. And mid-March is when the colleges are going to get students' financial information. They still need to create financial aid packages and send that to students. So this is going to have a really serious effect on when students actually figure out how much college is going to cost them.
Who is this going to hurt the most, do you think?
I think students. If colleges aren't receiving that financial aid information until mid-March, then students aren't going to see a financial aid award letter until April or even May, depending on how well-staffed financial aid offices are. And that's far later in the process than students are expecting. And students who are choosing between multiple colleges are now trying to do that without any real assurances about what their options will cost them. And we know from research that students underestimate their financial aid and overestimate the cost of college. So I think there's a real concern that continuing to prolong the time between students deciding to go to college and students receiving that information is going to affect enrollment choices. And I think especially for students who weren't sure about college to begin with, these extra hurdles and delays are going to feel really overwhelming. And it might dissuade them from enrolling at all. We're at about half the number of FAFSAs completed than we'd usually be at by this point. And I think there's really likely going to be a lot of students who just don't complete at all. And delaying financial aid packages are going to be a huge, huge problem. But we also really want to call attention to the folks who might forego the process entirely and not enroll in college when they might have otherwise.
And Ellie, that's, I think, a really important point. For people going to college next year and their families, they may hear about this rocky FAFSA rollout and, as you say, might not fill it out. If there's any thought they might go to college, they should still fill out that FAFSA, right?
Absolutely, yes. We know it's going to be a headache for a while, and students will have to wait a bit longer to really get the results of filling that out to find out what college will actually cost them. But it is still worth completing that form. Colleges can't give you financial aid without it. So I think best choice is still to complete that form.
Talking to Ellie Brooker, Associate Director of Policy Analytics at the Institute for College Access and Success. She has a PhD in Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis from UW-Madison. We're talking about delays in reporting and processing student financial aid as the Department of Education launches a new FAFSA form, the key national financial aid form used by governments and schools alike. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever filled out one of these FAFSA forms, whether it was by hand back in the day, the old online form? Maybe you've done it this year. Did you put it off because of the problems they were having? Did you encounter any trouble along the way? Do you have questions about who this affects, how it all works? And if you work in an institute of higher education, maybe in admissions, what are you worrying about right now? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Ellie Brooker from the Institute for College Access and Success about recent difficulties with the FAFSA, the government form that determines student financial aid eligibility. A delay in reporting student financial info to schools has left colleges and students in the lurch about financial aid decisions and deadlines for next year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? Have you filled out a FAFSA this year? Are you worried about the turnaround time? Did you run into hiccups when you tried to get online if you tried to do it earlier in the process? Can you compare and contrast what the old form was like to the new one if you've done it in multiple years? What questions do you have about all this? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ellie, speaking of deadlines, I see some schools, including many here in Wisconsin, are bumping back their decision deadlines, saying, hey, students, we know this is going on. We're going to give you a couple extra weeks in many cases to hopefully get that financial aid package and then make your decision. Are you expecting a lot of schools to pursue this path?
We certainly hope so. Students just will not be able to make those deadlines. Decision deadlines can happen as early as March for some schools. Many of them are May 1st. But if we expect award letters to arrive sometime in April, it's really important that we give students as much time as possible. I think colleges are aware that that's going to cause a pretty big burden on them, on their registrar's office, their enrollment department. But we're really grateful to see colleges extending those deadlines as much as possible.
And if people are listening and waiting for all this information, check with your school. A lot of them are posting various dates. It'd be a lot to list here, bumping back their decision deadlines. Now, Ellie, the change itself, I have twins in college. For many years in a row, I filled out two FAFSAs. I waited a little bit to do it this year. It is a faster process, and the whole IRS link up worked way faster than it has in recent years. Are you seeing some positives coming out of all of this rockiness and uncertainty?
Absolutely. In the long run, this is a good thing. Making the FAFSA easier for students and families to fill out is good. So far, it hasn't been easier just because of the access issues, just because of the delays, but actually filling out the form, as you said, does go much more smoothly once you're able to access it. And so long term, this is going to be a huge benefit for students. We're seeing more and more states require the FAFSA for high school graduation. And so making that form as low lift as possible for families is absolutely a good idea.
Let's go to our callers at 800-642-1234. Carol is with us here in Wisconsin. Carol, hi.
Hello. How are you today? Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. What did you want to tell us about, Carol?
Well, it's a little tangential. FAFSA, but I would hope that parents that are looking at students going to higher education also have their students look into something called the CLEP test, C-L-E-P. They're put on by the College Board, the same people that do the ACT and the SAT, and it is a very, very low-cost, simple way to get college credits. I've helped hundreds of students save thousands of dollars, and unfortunately, high schools typically don't look at them or recommend them because they're looking at AP tests. That's how they get measured. And colleges also typically do not say anything about them because they want your tuition dollars. So I would highly recommend that the students look at the CLEP tests and see how many credits can they get before they ever enter college, because you need 120 college credits to graduate. Why not get them the simple and easy way? So thank you very much.
Carol, thanks for the call. As Carol mentioned, a little tangential to FAFSA, Ellie, but do you look at those high school ways to, whether it's AP or these CLEP classes, to get early college credit?
Sure. I think we have some research examining whether or not those types of early college credit programs help students get to and through college faster. I believe that they do. That can also save money, as Carol said. I think I'm not familiar with CLEP in particular, but I think for any of those, always students should always be making sure that the colleges that they're looking at to go to will accept those credits, that they will count for the specific credits they want them to. So I think those are a great thing to look into. Just make sure you do your research.
Thanks for the call, Carol, at 800-642-1234. Bill is with us in Minnesota. Bill, hi.
Hi. I was trying to find out if there's a level of income at which financial aid or FAFSA would not be a viable option.
Thanks for the call, Bill. And yes, there are income levels where you're not going to get need-based financial aid, right, Ellie?
Yeah, there are. There's a pretty complicated formula behind that. Like a lot of things factor in. So I think it's still always a good idea to fill it out just to see. There's not like an exact number where there's a cutoff because there's so many things that factor in. But yeah, there's a certain point at which folks would be ineligible. There are some folks that wouldn't be eligible for any federal financial aid.
Bill, thanks for that call. And Ellie, that takes us to some of your research. If I'm reading your work right, the people who need financial aid the least and who are least likely to be eligible are the most likely to fill out the FAFSA, and the people at lower income levels may be less likely to fill out the FAFSA. Do I have that right?
You do. So in recent years, in my research, I've seen a pretty consistent pattern where Title I schools, which are schools that serve a high proportion of low-income students, have lower FAFSA completion rates than schools serving fewer low-income students. And as you said, that seems kind of backwards, right? Because low-income students are the ones most likely to be eligible for and need more financial aid. But we see that pattern across the nation where schools serving wealthier students tend to have higher completion rates than schools serving more low-income students.
What kind of things can we do to make sure that the students, potential college students who need that help, get that FAFSA filled out?
I think that Wisconsin has a really strong program for like FAFSA completion nights, FAFSA assistance nights. I've done some research on those, and those seem to work really, really well for students in that school district and surrounding districts. Any professional support that families can get to complete this form is helpful. High school counselors checking in with students, making sure that they've completed the form, that they're all set to go is really important. I think any kind of intervention where we can be reaching out to students and families, providing them help getting the form done is a good thing. Again, we do hope, though, that making these changes to the FAFSA, reducing that to 36 questions and making more pieces of that kind of be populated automatically will make it so that families need that help a little less.
Talking to Ellie Brooker with the Institute for College Access and Success, looking at FAFSA, the big national financial aid form, simplifying it, but it got less simple with some difficulties during the rollout of the new FAFSA. As I understand it, Ellie, you were a first-generation college student, a Pell recipient yourself. Can you talk about how that shaped your perspective and how these things really do can affect the lives of people who might not otherwise be able to go to college?
Absolutely. The FAFSA is a really daunting hurdle for all students and families. But I think especially so for those who don't have parents or older siblings or other family members or friends who've gone through it before. I remember when my family first filled it out in 2009, that was back when you first had to complete your taxes for that year and then use that information to complete the form. And I really, really remember the pressure that we felt, especially on my parents, to get that done because we knew that I'd be relying on financial aid. And that just feels very high stakes to look at this really complicated form and know that it's a required hurdle for you to be able to afford college. And so all of my work is shaped by those hurdles that I faced, being a Pell student, being a student loan borrower, being a first-generation college student. And I'm really determined that college be accessible to everybody who wants to go. And part of that means we have to make it easier for students to do things like complete the FAFSA because not everybody has the resources and support to jump through those hoops.
We started off by talking about a lack of appropriations from Congress, a lack of funding to put this change into practice. Well, here we are. It's Congress, another appropriations deadline coming up. Is this something that you see an opportunity to play some catch up and get more funding to hammer home this change?
We certainly would love to see Congress invest more in make greater investments in financial aid. You know, even a fully funded, maximum capacity, perfectly run federal student aid office can't magically create more Pell Grant money. States have a role to play here, too. Many have not caught up to the investments they were making before the Great Recession. And so in general, I think prioritizing higher education through funding is really, really paramount here. We would love to see Congress make historic investments in financial aid funding in this next appropriations bill.
And I see there's some breaking news that the Government Accountability Office is opening investigations into the Department of Education and their handling of this. If you could ask one question about what went wrong here, Ellie, what would it be just in our last minute or so?
That's a really great question. I think you know, we can acknowledge that the department is facing significant challenges here, but because this is going to have really serious negative impacts on students and colleges, we can't excuse that. And I hope that any investigation into this also keeps an eye on how this affects students downstream. Obviously, I have a lot of questions about how exactly all of this went wrong. I personally am more concerned with an investigation into how students deal with all of this, how they respond to getting financial aid packages later, how many of them don't complete the form at all, how many of them don't enroll. That's, I think, the priority on my end.
Ellie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Ellie Brooker is Associate Director of Policy Analytics at the Institute for College Access and Success. She has a PhD in Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis from UW-Madison. She was with us for a look at the latest about the new FAFSA financial aid form and how delays are affecting students and families as college decision time gets closer. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, cheese, motorcycles, and video games. Check out a new effort to boost Wisconsin as a hub for video game design and production and what that can mean for the state's economy. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.